In Mark chapter 8, verses 1 through 21, Jesus had already been, last week we saw his encounter with the Syrophoenician woman. And actually, in that encounter, that awkward encounter, what we see is Jesus' ministry now including the Gentiles. It had always meant to include the Gentiles, but he went first to the Jewish nation, the children of Israel, and now he is broadening out to the Gentiles. Disciples have been with him all this time. They've seen all the things that he's done. They've been a part of his different miracles. And so we pick it up in chapter 8. In those days, when again a great crowd had gathered and they had nothing to eat, he called his disciples to them and said to them, I have compassion on the crowd because they have been with me now 3 days and have nothing to eat. Now this sounds like what we read a few weeks ago about the feeding of the 5,000, but this is different. This is in the Phoenicia area. This is in Gentile territory. So the crowd that he's concerned about are Gentiles, not children of Israel. And he goes on and says, if I send them away hungry to their homes, they will faint on the way. And some of them have come from far away. And his disciples answered him, hey, no sweat. We remember the 5,000 that you fed. No. And his disciples answered him and said, how can one feed these people with bread here in this desolate place? It's like they never even were a part of the feeding of the 5,000, where they actually handed out the food and then they took back the leftovers. It's just the here and now. They are so filled with the here and now, they could not remember anything in the past. Or they just didn't want to assume that Jesus was going to feed a bunch of Gentiles. I don't know. But they were very dull and very slow in learning. And he asked them, well, how many loaves do you have? And they said 7. And he directed the crowd to sit down on the ground. And he took the 7 loaves, and having given thanks, he broke them and gave thanks to his and gave them to his disciples to sit before the crowd. And they had a few small fish, and having blessed them, he said that these also should be sent out before them. And the crowd, they ate and were satisfied, and they took up the broken pieces left over, 7 basketfuls. And there were about 4,000 people, and he sent them away. So a big feeding of this group. Disciples were a part of it again. And then afterwards, just like with the feeding of 5,000, they got in the boat. And immediately he got into the boat with his disciples and went to the district of Dalmanutha. And there, back in the Israel territory, Jewish territory, the Pharisees came and began to argue with him, seeking from him a sign from heaven to test him. One little verse, a lot of information here. First, the Pharisees were kind of waiting and waiting for him, because that's how I did that. They came out, that they were ready for him. They were looking for him. And as soon as he showed up, they went out to him. And they began to argue with him because they didn't like him. He did things that they didn't think were appropriate. He taught things with more authority than they had. He healed on the Sabbath. He hung around with people that were unclean. And the other times that they had confrontations with him, and when they would call him the son of the devil and other things, he would return and refer to them as being hard-hearted and hypocritical. They didn't like him. So they came out to argue. And you know people like that, they just want to argue. You know, they'll ask you a question. Maybe a simple little question, you answer it, and then there's a whole argument that they want to start with it. And what they were asking for was a sign from heaven. Now, he's been performing miracles in front of them. He's healed leper. He's made a deaf man to be able to speak. He's been able to make a blind see. He's been able to... He's cast out demons. He's fed people. There are all kinds of things that Jesus had done. But they wanted a sign from heaven. Maybe something like the sky opens, a spotlight on you, little cherubs come down. We want that. That's what we want. You know, I've heard people say, well, you know, I'm not going to believe God unless he cracks the heaven open and sends down a message right away. And the problem with that is that's kind of a forced belief. It's not a voluntary belief. It's actually leaving no room for doubt. So there's a lack of really even a trust in that. So they want this. And they're doing it to test him. And the first time that we ever see this phrase is when Jesus was tested by the devil in the wilderness. So Mark is alluding back to the fact that while they're religious leaders, they're actually working for the devil. And Jesus sighed deeply. We're not talking about the, okay. We're talking about, oh, can you believe it? Kind of an angry, nostril clearing sigh. Today we would add that into this translation, are you kidding me? He sighed deeply in his spirit and he said, why does this generation seek a sign? You've had signs. Why are you still looking for them? Then he says, truly I say to you, no sign will be given to this generation. This is an oath formula, and usually it's no sign will be given to this generation, or may I be cursed would be kind of the whole formula, but he doesn't do that whole formula. He just does the first one, showing the emphasis, no sign. And then a tragic verse follows this, and it says, and immediately he got into the boat with his disciples, and he left them, got into the boat again, and went to the other side. So the God incarnate, in the presence of these religious leaders who are supposed to be pointing the people to the Messiah, to Jesus Christ, God walked out on them. God left them, left their presence. And he went over to the other side. So another boat journey with the disciples. And we have preview to three of these boat journeys about what is happening in the boat. And this is an account in verse 14 that we get to see the disciples in the boat with Jesus again. Now you remember the first time they were in the boat with Jesus that we saw there's a storm, they were afraid, he rebuked the winds and rebuked them for having a lack of faith. Then later on, they were in a boat by themselves, and he came walking along the water, displaying that he is the Son of God, that he is God incarnate. They think he's a ghost and panic, and he talks to them about being hard-hearted and not understanding the feeding of the 5,000. So now what we see is, it's in verse 14, it says, now they, talking about the disciples, had forgotten to bring bread. They only had one loaf with them in the boat. So all the bread that was left over, somebody had only brought a loaf. And this might be Mark kind of playing on a little bit of words, referring that the one loaf may be the bread of life, and that's Jesus. And then Jesus cautioned them, saying, watch out, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod. Now, leaven in the Bible typically is almost always used to refer to evil. Not always, but almost always. And usually when we think of leaven, we think of it in terms of like yeast today. But the leaven of the old wasn't like the yeast that we have today. And what you would do is you would use a little leaven, and it would kind of like yeast, permeate the dough, make it rise, make it a little lighter, make it not so hard to eat. And then you would cook it. But before you would cook it, you would take a little piece off and set it off to the side. And then you would feed it so that it'll sit there growing, kind of like Amish friendship bread. Anybody ever do Amish friendship bread? You know, the first time I ever saw Amish friendship bread, I'm looking at that going, shouldn't that be refrigerated? Really, you're going to leave that on the table and just keep putting things in it? Isn't that kind of gross? Isn't that dangerous? Well, back then it was dangerous because the leaven, and it was easy to contaminate. We didn't have the things like we do now and sealing things properly. And so that sometimes the leaven would become basically poisonous, you know, where you would get food poisoning from it. And then you would put it in the dough and you'd save a little bit, maybe give it to somebody else, and then you're nothing like a little tomaine, you know, among friends, right? And so all these people were getting sick. So Jesus is telling them that they need to beware the Pharisees. You know, here are these religious people that are just so legalistic and acoustic in their faith and their belief, and they just will not believe no matter what. Or Herod, who just lives however he wants to live and fulfills any wish that he desires, any carnal desire of his life. And the thing that he and the Pharisees have in common, which they didn't like each other, is that they were resolved in their disbelief of Christ. So he's trying to tell them this, and being the sharp guys that they were, began to discuss with one another the fact that they had no bread. Which is a little humorous, because they're with the guy who just fed 9,000 people with very little bread. So they're in there arguing about no bread. And Jesus, aware of this, said to them, and I'm sure there had to be a little bit of a sigh, why are you discussing the fact that you have no bread? Do you not yet perceive or understand? Are your hearts hardened? Having eyes, do you not see? And having ears, do you not hear? And do you not remember? So not just hardened hearts. Now they have hardened hearts, closed eyes, closed ears, and a bad memory. And then he says, when I broke the 5 loaves for the 5,000, how many baskets full of broken pieces did you take up? Well, they said 12. Right. And the 7 for the 4,000, how many baskets full of broken pieces did you take up? And they said to him, 7. And he said to them, do you not yet understand? So now we're doing math. And he's asking them about baskets. And then at the end, he says, do you not understand? Well, we get it. Well, what do we get? What is he trying to get at here? Because he's trying to teach them something. Because he's asking, don't you remember? You know, earlier when he was in another boat trip, he said, you didn't learn a lesson from the feeding of the 5,000, and you're not learning a lesson now. So it's interesting, because the 5,000 were to Jewish folk that he fed. And when they got the baskets back, they were 12. Like 12 tribes of Israel. And then with the Gentiles, he got 7 baskets back. Which is, in the Bible, when we look at the number 7, a lot of times we refer to that as a perfect number, as a complete number. So Jesus, in the last couple chapters, has been showing the disciples that his mission isn't just to Israel, but it's that he's the bread of life to the entire world. But they're still not getting it. But isn't it nice that he's patient enough to keep teaching them? That when we don't get things, that God is patient with us. That he's not going to give up on us. As long as we're not in that defiant kind of disbelief. So when we take a look at this passage of Scripture, the warning is we don't want to miss the work of Christ. And there's a couple ways that we can miss that. One is just through stubborn unbelief. In Psalm 81, verse 15, God was talking about the stubbornness of the children of Israel, and he says, so I gave them up over their stubborn hearts to follow their own counsels. Kind of the same way that Jesus gave up on those religious leaders, right? Gave them over. If this is what you want to believe, that's fine. That's it. And the issue is, for the children of Israel of old and of these religious leaders now, is that they wanted belief on their own terms. I'll believe in you if you do this. You know, God has a certain way, that's fine, but, you know, if God doesn't bend his will to mine, I'm not going to believe him. And there's a stubbornness that you can show me all these other signs, and I'm still not going to believe it because I have a specific thing that I want to see. I do want to see the heavens crack open and cherubs coming down and telling me what I need to believe, right? That's my terms, God. Take it or leave it. And so Jesus left it. He passed judgment on them. And he left them in their unbelief. And that is a danger, I think, that people have, that if they have dug in so much into their unbelief, there is a danger that God will just finally abandon them because they are just willfully unwilling to even consider belief in him, and nothing is going to change their mind. Now, probably for us in this room, our real danger about missing the work of God is that our faith might get a little dull. It might be a little in jeopardy, you know, a little vulnerable. We need to take care of that. We need to take care of our faith. In Mark 8, verse 15, Jesus cautioned them, saying, watch out, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod. Basically, we need to remember there are negative influences in the world. Some of those negative influences might be from even our childhood of people who said that they were Christians but were really not, and they might have been very unkind. Or there might be a negative influence of people who are saying that they're Christ followers, but their life and their message don't add up, or maybe their message doesn't even add up. And oftentimes we can find these negative influences because they just like to gripe and complain and argue. You know, mentioned that, you know, how they came out to test Jesus and they're arguing with him. There are times that, you know, I'm in meetings with pastors and they ask, when I was younger, I learned there's no really innocent question. They'll ask a question, maybe a doctrinal question, or what Bible do you use or whatever. And if you answer that, it gave them an answer that's just a little bit off, they wanted to correct you. And they wanted to argue. So anymore, when I am around them and I feel like I'm being tested by them, I just give them crazy answers. They don't even know how to respond to some of the things that I say to them. That's fine, because I'm not interested in arguing. And I've walked out of a lot of times talking to people, just going, nope, not going to talk about that, and walk away. So we need to recognize that there are some negative influences. But yet, we also need to recognize that even though we might be dull and we may not understand things, Christ offers hope and patience. Even in how he said, and he said to them in Mark 8:21, do you not yet understand? Yet understand. So he's working with them. Not yet? Okay, well, we'll keep working on this. So there is this desire and hope for a fuller understanding. And as Christ followers and more mature people in this room, we need to be patient with those who are younger in their faith, whether they're younger by age or just younger in faith. Because sometimes coming out of the world, coming out of their backgrounds, they don't fully understand. I think that was a big problem that the disciples had. Really, I see that so clearly in the Gospel of Mark, because these religious leaders were having these issues with Jesus, and the disciples were having similar, but not quite as hostile issues. Because basically they're looking at the religious leaders that they grew up with, and now they're looking at Jesus and they're trying to figure things out. And so there needs to be a hope and a desire that we're going to grow beyond. And the best way to do this is to remember and to recount. Remember, Jesus is asking, do you remember the 5,000? Do you remember the 4,000? Sometimes we have to go back and do that ourselves. Do we remember life before Christ? Do we remember that we were living an empty way of living and needed rescuing, and how we confessed Christ, our Lord and our Savior, and He rescued us? You know, remember how He has delivered us from different issues? You know, and start thinking through that. Do I remember those godly influences in my life that really meant something? People who really demonstrated the gospel message in how they lived, and recounting the blessings that God has bestowed upon us. Because really the problem of the here and the now is that we become forgetful. And we have to constantly remind ourselves, and that was a problem all throughout the Bible, even in the Old Testament, where God told His people, don't forget, don't forget. Because the reality is, we do not want to miss the work of Christ. And it's so easy to do when we kind of get lazy in our faith, we get kind of bad influences, and we kind of become so involved in the here and now that we forget how we got here.